What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 109. Today, we're going to be talking about statins. And if you don't know what statins are, they're just a very popular cholesterol-lowering drug. And I'm titling this the statin scam, so you can already tell my opinion on them. I think they're the biggest scam in the history of medicine, and it's a huge topic, so we're going to break this podcast up into multiple episodes instead of having just one, you know, five-hour podcast. So just sit back and learn, honestly, about this huge scam. But first, we'll do a quick article of the week. So there was a pretty popular article this week about Subway and their bread not technically being bread anymore. So Tom, you want to go over that?
Well, I think like the big takeaway that I have from this article is that like the American guidelines are trash compared to like everywhere else. Because this is out of Ireland, and it's an Irish court ruled that Subway bread is not bread because technically it has too much sugar for it to be considered bread. Like this is something I never thought of. I was like, what is the difference between cake and bread, basically? And I guess that has something to do with the amount of sugar in it. So for it to be bread, it has to, the amount of sugar cannot exceed 2% of the weight of flour in the dough. And Subway's is 5 times that amount.
Yeah, it's about 10%, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a pretty big difference. I don't know if it's quite as far as, like, you're eating a deli sandwich in between, like, two, like, maple bars. I don't think it's quite that much sugar. But when you think about all that flour, or the majority of that flour is going to get turned into sugar in your body anyway, that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, Subway, they had very, very effective marketing. I don't know, maybe that was like 20 years ago now. What was his name, Jared, the guy who lost like 100 pounds?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think they talk about him anymore because of, didn't he have like a child
Like pornography
thing?
Yeah,
he did. I forgot exactly what it was, but it's something with children, and
something very not good. Yeah, no, he's just look at that guy, you can tell he's a creepy looking dude. But their marketing was, you know, he quote-unquote didn't diet, he just ate nothing but Subway sandwiches and lost 100 pounds. And it was just Subway, there's really nothing nutritionally sound about Subway. Because if you even think about the bread, obviously the bread has way too much sugar in it, and like you said, the bread breaks down into sugar anyways no matter what bread it is, so it's damn near all sugar in a sense. But I think about it, even with the quality of like the meats are loaded with fillers, and you're not getting enough actual protein to really like count. So from like a dietary standpoint, Subway sandwiches are like the worst thing. They're like health food in disguise, and it's really nothing healthy about it.
Yeah, but I'm willing to bet if you talk to most people, they would think Subway is, like, the healthiest option out of, like, all the fast food type options.
Yeah.
I think Subway would be at the top. And I'm willing to bet, like, most dietitians and stuff would be on board with Subway. Because you're getting, you know, like, quote-unquote fresh, like, vegetables, you know, like lettuce and tomatoes and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm willing to bet, like, that would probably be, like, the number one choice. But it's like, no, that stuff's straight trash. The meat is also, like, extremely lean and, like, ultra-processed. So even just, like, the protein, like, the vitamins aren't there. There's not enough fat for you to be getting, or, like, all your minerals and stuff like that either. I mean, like, the only thing you might be getting is a lot of sodium.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, like, the best high-quality sodium because it's just there to preserve the meat, not actually, like, the Redmond's real salt, like, that, like, natural salt that we use.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think you're right. It's just the like the narrative out there from dietitians and from people who are considering eating healthy, Subway would be considered better. But realistically, you can go to McDonald's, which gets a bad rap, and get like a double quarter pounder with cheese, just take off the bun, and that would be a million times better than anything at Subway, because at least you're getting quality protein from the beef and the cheese, and then, you know, whatever lettuce, tomatoes, whatever else you want to put on it. But no one would ever consider McDonald's healthier than Subway, you know?
So would cheese be like the healthiest thing that you're getting on a Subway sandwich?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I guess it depends on, I've never really like looked into it, like what, are they actually using like cheese? Is there enough like cheese there to be really considered cheese?
Actually, that's a really good point. Yeah, I don't know.
Because there are like those, I don't want to single out like Kraft singles, but there's like, you know, those type of cheeses that are like a cheese product because they can't even be considered cheese because there's so many fillers in them and stuff like that. So I'm willing to bet Subway's probably the same way.
Yeah, you know, that's true.
If their bread's not even bread.
Yeah, I know, right? If they can't get bread right, what makes you think they can get cheese right either, right? I know. Yeah, this is a quick side note, but don't ask me how I got to this website, but I recently looked at, you can find the ingredient list of all, like, like, fast foods online. So I was on, like, Taco Bell's menu, and I was looking through all their ingredients online. And first off, it's like everything has soy oil in it, like literally everything. But what I was actually surprised with was even the meats, like the chicken, had canola oil or soy oil in the chicken. So like you can't even get pure meats from Taco Bell.
Well, I think it's used as like a marinade or something.
It's just crazy. It's crazy to me. Like you can't get anything healthy from a Subway or from Taco Bell. It's like fast food, stuff like that. It's just rough, you know?
Yeah, I'm wondering, I've never really looked into this, but would some place like Burger King be better? Because like they use like a grill instead of like the flat surface because it's got those grill marks. So maybe they're not using cooking oil.
I have no clue. Yeah. Well, I know like McDonald's doesn't use cooking oil and yeah, like In-N-Out doesn't. But Burger King, I don't think Burger King's meat is actually 100% beef. It's like cut with something.
I forget. What, did they use, like, flour as a filler or something?
I don't know. It's something, yeah. Because I remember at one point looking through fast food restaurants that had actual, if they say it was beef, it was 100% beef. And it was, like, Wendy's, McDonald's, In-N-Out, The Habit, places like that. But Burger King wasn't on the list. I forget what it's cut with, but it's cut with something.
Is Five Guys, was that on the top of that list?
I didn't see Five Guys. But Five Guys is pretty small compared to, like, you know, McDonald's or Wendy's, you know? So maybe it just didn't make the list, yeah.
So. Because that's like my go-to burger spot. Like I'm a California boy. I love In-N-Out, but with this pandemic and it's just drive-through only, I'm not about to like get in line a block and a half away from In-N-Out and wait for 45 minutes.
It's
for
crazy.
A burger.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, it really is. I've never had Five Guys in my life, so I don't even know.
I like it. I mean, I don't really get a lot of the lettuce and tomatoes and stuff like that. But when I was doing keto, like I get lettuce wrap burgers, and that was like my favorite spot. And it seems like their produce is a lot fresher.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of like an easy way to tell, like, hey, they have like fresh produce, then the rest of their stuff is probably better.
Yeah, I guess that's a good gauge. Yeah. So I know I'll try Five Guys at some point. I just never have, you know, but so that's article of the week. Subway is sorry for that whole tangent, but Subway sucks. That's pretty much the gist of it. You can the article is fairly interesting. If you want to read it, you can find it on tntwellnessandnutrition.com, so you can check it out, and the link will be on this post, so you can just go there and find it. So let's just start with the topic of this week's podcast, which is statins. And this is something I've wanted to talk about for a long time because I've been like honestly pretty passionate about it. One of the very first books I read when going down this low-carb, keto, just whole food route was a book called The Great Cholesterol Con. And it's a very eye-opening book. And the bulk of it is about statins, since statins are designed to block cholesterol synthesis in our body. And once I read that book, and it goes through the whole history of the corruption in the pharmaceutical companies and the AHA, the American Heart Association, and just the history of why statins are prescribed, the history of why just doctors are told, like, just honestly since day one, that LDL is bad cholesterol. And like once I read this, I was like, oh man, you can't you can't believe anything. And because that is something that is just known by so many people. Like, you know this, like, even like people in our family that know nothing about health, like, don't work out, don't care about what they eat, they know LDL is bad cholesterol.
Oh, I mean, anytime I try to talk to somebody about, like, the diet that I'm following, that's the thing that they always bring up. Like, oh, aren't you worried about cholesterol? Aren't you worried about having a heart attack? And my answer is always, yes, that's why I eat this way.
Yeah, that's a good way to spin it on their head. Yeah. But that's how far, like, this message has just kind of creeped into just the narrative of the whole country and the whole world, honestly, and the dietary guidelines is just this narrative that LDL is bad is just so, I don't know, it's just screamed from every doctor in the world, every dietitian in the world. And so this first episode for this, like the statin scam series we're going to do, I want to really go back to the history of it. Like, what started this whole thing about cholesterol being bad for you? And because it wasn't always like this. I know people think like, oh, we've known forever that LDL is bad. No. Like, back in the day, like, pretty much our grandparents, like, mine, Tom's generation, our grandparents, and definitely our great-great-grandparents, if you go to, like, the 1800s, nobody feared animal fats. Nobody feared cholesterol because, shit, that's all we could eat. We didn't have any processed foods. And guess what? People weren't dying from heart attacks at the rate we are today. So it's just this whole LDL being bad is fairly new. And it's really about something called the diet-heart hypothesis. This is the foundation in which statins are built upon. And it started back in the 60s by a man named Ansel Keys and a study he conducted. And I'm saying studies in air quotes because calling this shit a study is giving it way too much credit. But a study called the Seven Country Study. And in this study, it showed that people with higher LDL tend to have more heart attacks. And if you ever looked at this study or even a post, a picture about it, It was broken down, like, all this data, all this complicated stuff into one graph, and it showed LDL on one side and heart attacks on the other, and the more LDL, the higher the heart attacks. It was pretty much a straight line, and it almost made it seem like case closed. Like, this is, like, bulletproof, like, it's very obvious, more LDL, more heart attacks. But that wasn't the case. The problem is that the data used to support his hypothesis was cherry-picked. The study, again in air quotes, actually included 22 countries, but he excluded every country and data point that didn't support his hypothesis. So basically, he already had his conclusion in mind that LDL was bad and that high LDL would lead to more heart attacks. And then he went out and fit that data to make that conclusion true. And I've said this last week, I've said this in a bunch of podcasts, that's not how science works. You go out to prove your hypothesis wrong. And if you can't prove it wrong, then it turns into a theory and you're right. And that's just, like, think of Einstein's theory of relativity. No one has proved it wrong yet. Therefore, it's a theory. That's how the shit works. But the diet-heart hypothesis has been proven wrong since day one. And I think you know more about that, right? Like, it's just, he cherry-picked his data from the jump.
I mean, saying yeah, he cherry-picked it is being kind of generous with that term. I mean, he excluded 70% of his data. I mean, and honestly, he did prove it wrong. He just ignored it.
Yeah,
he did. It's not that he, like, the founder of this hypothesis proved himself wrong. It was like, whatever, I'm going with it anyway. That's like the worst thing you could possibly do. I don't understand how that's possible.
Yeah, I mean, he was just a shitty-ass person, honestly, but...
Yeah. Well... The main reason that he did this study in the 60s has to go, we have to go back a little bit further. In 1955, President Eisenhower had a heart attack while he was in office. And that made, like, the whole entire country just, like, heart disease is, like, the number one thing that we need to focus on. I believe it was the number one killer at that time. If not, it was, like, right up there. But now that the president had a heart attack, like, everybody was taking it serious, and it was a lot more people were like, we need to find a cure for this. I think that has a lot to do with why this shitty study, like, had so much effect. Is people were just looking for an answer, and it didn't have to be a right one. Like, oh, this guy figured something out. Let's just run with it.
Yeah, and you think about the, like, political climate in the 50s. Like, our president was almost like a king. You know what I mean? Like, think of whatever, Kennedy and all these type of people. It wasn't like today where... I mean, if someone saw a president today get sick or die, not too many people would be that upset because it's just, it's very divisive nowadays. But back in the day, people really, they really cared about who the president was. So having the president have a heart attack was a big deal, like you said.
Well, I mean, especially Eisenhower, he was a war hero. He got us through World War II. You know, he's a conquering veteran.
Yeah, so if he can get heart disease, then any of us could. You know, that's obviously the narrative back then. And so just the basis of that, of his study, of his conclusion, of his theory, or excuse me, his hypothesis, was the higher the LDL, the likely chance, the more likely you are to have a heart attack. But here's the whole problem with this theory, or one of the many, many problems with this theory, is half the people who have heart attacks actually have low LDL. And so let that sink in. Like, how can we blame LDL for heart disease when half the people who have heart attacks don't even have high LDL? And it's not like this came out like fairly recently. This was known in the 60s when all of this was going on. And I pulled a quote here. So, quote, in 1964, the famous Houston heart surgeon Michael DeBakey reported similarly negative findings from the records of 1,700 of his own patients. And even if high cholesterol was associated with an increased incidence of heart disease, this begged the question of why so many people suffer coronary heart disease despite having low cholesterol, and why a tremendous number of people with high cholesterol never get heart disease or die of it, end quote. So this was known then, that this link that this dude Ansel Keys tried to connect was the weakest link ever, and it just wasn't there. This was 1,700 patients. Like, that's a fairly big group.
Yeah, and all it's doing is showing association. That's all that they're looking for. And I know we've said this a million times by now. Association doesn't equal causation. So if you see association, you're supposed to take a deeper dive and see why that association is even there. I mean, in this case, there really is no association. So, I mean, like, making any sort of conclusion from the information at hand just doesn't make any sense, especially with the conclusion that they came up with.
Yeah, but that's just, I guess, that's a step too far for these people. No one really understood that, you know? But why do we target LDL today? And it's basically because doctors have a drug that lowers it. And pharmaceutical companies make a ton of money because of this. There's no hard science showing statins provide some huge benefit, yet they are still prescribed at an alarming rate. And you'll see these things like, oh, everyone take a statin, it'll save your life, 50% this, 20% this. But it's just, honestly, they can manipulate the data backwards and forwards to make it fit. None of it is actually there if you analyze this data correctly. And people think that nutrition science is some, like, I don't know, definitive hard science like mathematics, in which we have most of the answers. Like, we know 2 + 2 = 4. No one's really arguing that. But that's not the case. Like, nutrition science has been mainly pushed forward through something called the great man theory. And this is when strong personalities steer the ship, no matter if they are right or wrong, or even well-versed in the field on the topics in which they're speaking on. Like, Ansel Keys, for example, was, like, pushed around as some top doctor. Because, you know, every, like, ad he was in, every, like, commercial, he was wearing a white coat and glasses. He looked like the typical American doctor. And people would think he'd be well-versed in nutrition, when really, he wasn't even a medical doctor. He simply had a PhD. And you know what his PhD was on? It was on studying eels. How far away are eels from humans? That's about as far as you can get. Like, he didn't even study dogs, you know?
I mean, at least to a land mammal, that would at least be somewhat close. I mean, they're not even close to us. I don't even know. There's so many animals in between.
So many animals in between, yeah. So he literally had no background in nutrition at all. Yet this is the guy we let shape the entire world's dietary guidelines. And before this work, he did, study, the Seven Country Study, he did work with the Army pretty much to determine the literal least amount of calories possible to survive. It's something called, like, the Keys Ration. You'll see that even in today's military, it's something. It was called, like, the Minnesota Study. And so pretty much we let this guy run a study showing that, you know, he pretty much just starved a bunch of dudes to death. Pretty much, or near death. I don't know if anybody actually died, but he almost killed a bunch of people. And this is the guy we let steer our ship. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, that makes no sense. That's such a horrible type of study to do. I don't even think we can ethically do those studies anymore.
No, we couldn't.
And I'm honestly, like, even just trying to figure out, like, how many calories somebody needs to survive, I mean, that's going to depend on so many factors. That's one thing I do hate about nutritional science. It's, like, it's so easy to manipulate.
It is.
This is, like, the best case study possible to show how easy it is to manipulate data. I mean, you get rid of two-thirds of the data that doesn't match what you... doesn't fit your hypothesis.
Yeah, and then you got your conclusion right there. Exactly, yeah. So, Ansel Keys pretty much knew nothing about nutrition, but he was known to have a strong will, and he hated to be wrong. And this is repeated a lot by anybody who knew him back in the day. When he first presented his idea to the AHA, the American Heart Association, they laughed in his face. They knew telling people to limit fat intake made no sense, because after that, up to that point, fat was never demonized. But Ansel Keys bullied his way onto the AHA board, and within 4 years, he completely changed their tune and stance on fat in the diet. And remember, when he first said that fat's bad, it raises cholesterol, cholesterol causes heart disease, these people were like, yeah, bro, like, take that crazy shit somewhere else. But then under 4 years later, they completely changed it. And the only thing that changed was he was now on the board. There were no new studies. There was no, like, big revelation. It was just now his personality was on that board and could steer the ship. And since Ansel Keys was a politically influential man from his work with the government and the Keys Rash and the Minnesota study, in the mid-1970s, when the American diet became a political issue, his ideas were viewed as absolute truths, even though he never had the adequate data to back up his claims. In 1977, Senator McGovern and his Committee on Nutrition and Human Needs recommended Ansel Keys' low-cholesterol, low-fat diet to the nation, and this officially turned the scientific debate into a political one. And we all know, I mean, shit, this client now, I mean, what do you call it, the climate nowadays, everyone knows this. Once you're talking about politics, telling the truth really doesn't matter. What really matters is, like, selling a believable story to the masses and just making people believe it, right?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And just kind of going off what I said earlier about the whole Eisenhower having a heart attack, the nation wanted answers, so they were giving them an answer. It didn't have to be the right answer. It just had to be an answer. And that's what they were focusing on. And that's, I think, what led to them going so hard and heavy on this shitty study and this shitty hypothesis.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing was, like, it was so shitty, it made it so simple that people believed it, and it made for good, like, infographics. And I'm sure people have seen this, like, the picture with oil, like, oil in the pipes, like, in your house, in the sink, and it makes a connection with fat in your diet and these oil in the pipes that it gets clogged up. Like, oh, fat in the oil or fat in our pipes in the kitchen clogs it. It's the same thing with fat in your arteries. And it's like, yeah, that makes for a good picture. And it's a super, like, I don't know, any idiot out there can be like, oh, that makes sense. But guess what? That's not true. Like, that's not how our body works at all. But it didn't matter because it sold well. And it's just, it's sad.
That's just using this shitty argument that, well, saturated fat, things like butter and coconut oil, those are hard at room temperature, so they're solid. And then things like canola oil, soybean oil, they're liquid at room temperature, so these things are healthy for your arteries, they won't clog it, where this butter and this coconut oil, they will clog your arteries. That's fucking backward science. Our body temperature is way hotter, so I don't even know if saturated or fat could solidify, but it sure as hell isn't going to do that while we're alive, because we're way too warm for that to happen.
Yeah, exactly, and it's just not how our body works. Like, that's not how anything in our body works, so it's honestly sad. So the primary...
Maybe that's how it works in eels. I don't know.
That's a good point. If it worked like that in eels, maybe I'd believe it. Yeah, but not in humans. That's just not how our body works. And the primary author of the National Dietary Guidelines was a journalist named Nick Modern. And I'll never forget his name. And I'm pulling this from Gary Taub's books, Good Calories, Bad Calories. I'm going to put a link on the website, too, to this book if you want to read it. It's huge. Honestly, it's like the size of the Bible. But it outlines this whole history and just honestly, just the craziness of it. So, but this guy, Nick Modern, he wasn't a scientist or a researcher or anything that might give him some level of credibility in the arguments concerning our diet. But this guy coined the term complex carbohydrates to make sugar sound fancy. And everyone bought it. Like, before this, carbs were usually just referred to as starch, which is way more accurate because it's just a line of glucose molecules. But now you'll never hear someone refer to, like, I don't know, wheat bread as starch. They'll refer it as a complex carbohydrate. And it bugs me every time. I'm like, man, if you only knew, that's just some made up term. You know, that's just some buzzword.
Yeah, they make things like pasta and bread sound a little bit healthier because they're not sugars anymore. They're complex carbohydrates.
Yeah, it's like, okay, bro, not very complex, but keep telling yourself that. And Ansel Keys, it wasn't like he went unopposed. Like, there were a lot of people back in the day who tried to tell the committee, like, hey, this is not right, this is wrong. And one of the biggest ones was a guy named John Yudkin. And Yudkin knew that cholesterol wasn't the devil that Ansel Keys made it out to be. He saw a huge hole in the theory, which involved literally half the world's population. He asked, if cholesterol is so bad, why are women usually healthier than men, even though on average they have higher cholesterol? Because if cholesterol was such a killer, women should not be healthier than men. And
that's a pretty damn good question.
It is a good question, right? Women also live longer. They suffer from dementia at a much lower rate and don't have as many heart attacks as their male counterparts. But people who were just diehard Ansel Keys fans and just believed his diehard hypothesis, they tried to explain this away by simply stating it was a female paradox. Like, oh, it didn't fit the data, but that doesn't mean our data is not wrong. It's just a paradox. And trust me, there's a French paradox, there's an Inuit paradox, there's a Maasai paradox, there's all these different examples that don't fit this data, but no one actually like goes, oh, so maybe our hypothesis isn't correct. They go, no, it's just a shit ton of paradoxes. Makes no sense, but whatever, you know?
So I can kind of get the understanding around, like, okay, the Inuit, that's a very small population, the Maasai, that's a very small population, because I can kind of see how those can be considered a paradox. But female paradox, that's half the world. I think that's a little over half the world. I don't understand how that can be a paradox.
Yeah.
And the French paradox, I mean, that's an entire nation. I also don't understand how that can be a paradox. I mean, because now you're talking about a lot of people. You're not just talking about some remote tribe of people over here.
Yeah, that's a good point. And so before, when this initially happened, this whole female paradox came up, proponents of the diet-heart hypothesis defended the female paradox by claiming that female hormones protect women from the harms of cholesterol. But this wasn't true either, because guess what? There were studies on it. And there was never a study showing that estrogen or other female sex hormones protect women from heart disease ever. There's never been a study showing that. And further, exams done on women who had their sexual organs removed show no difference in their defense against these conditions compared to women who still had their ovaries. But these arguments were never seriously considered, and when the low-fat, low-cholesterol recommendations were made officially by the government in 1977, it was considered the end of the debate, at least from the public's perspective. Everyone just thought, okay, it is now a fact that fat and cholesterol are bad, and they will give you heart disease. Even though the debate was never really over, and actually never even really started, but that's just what happens when politics get involved. And ever since then, the AHA, the American Heart Association, has continued to push the same narrative, and the dietary guidelines haven't changed that much in the last 50 years, even though the rate of obesity and diabetes has skyrocketed since the government recommended a high-carb diet. And here's the kicker, heart disease is still the number one killer in the nation. So yeah, everyone's fatter, everyone has diabetes, and we're all still dying of heart disease. So yeah, the recommendations really worked.
Yeah, heart disease is still the number one killer, despite the rise of how many people are dying from things like cancer, diabetes, Alzheimer's, like all these other diseases as well. Those have skyrocketed. Those like barely even existed 50 years ago, or at least weren't as fatal as they were, as they are today. But heart disease is still number one. It's still outranking cancer and all those other fatal diseases. And it's just like, come on, how much more evidence do we need that this stuff isn't working? We need to try something else.
Like, man, it doesn't take a genius. Just look around. And I've said this a million times. Everyone is fat and sick. Everyone. Like, if you're walking around, you're lean. And if you're, like, half skinny, you stand out. And that is not the normal. Go back to 1920, 1930, 1940. Look at those pictures. Look at those old black and white pictures. If you saw someone that was obese, they would stand out like a sore thumb. But nowadays, that's just normal. And it's just their recommendations of this high-carb diet is seriously, like slowly killing the world. Because every nation in the world follows America's, like, guidelines. We were the genesis of the high-carb diet. And everyone's affected by it. And it needs to change. It really does. I don't know if it's ever going to. But it's just, like I said, once it became political, the story, like, it was just a wrap. Like, being right never really mattered. And it still doesn't matter to this day. And this is really the gist of the statins. This is the evidence used to damn LDL. And of course, they've done a million studies on statins since then. And you'll read some articles saying it's good, some articles saying it's bad. But this is the genesis. This is how strong as it was. This is the foundation that they're built on. They're built on sand, but no one knows it.
Yeah, and just hearing about the 7-country study, that was like the first thing that really got me like wanting to learn more. Like you mentioned earlier, like one of the first books you bought was The Great Cholesterol Con. I bought a similar book. It's called The Great Cholesterol Myth. I mean, there's a lot of books out there about cholesterol being a con, a myth, or just like some other fancy one. There's like The Cholesterol Code. There's a bunch of those type of cholesterol books out there, all showing the same thing, all repeating basically all what we just said. And it's just like, damn, like once I read that and I was just like, okay, what else do I have wrong? Like that was the first thing that really got me started on this like health journey and just kind of like relearning what I already like learned wrong.
Yep. Yeah. So yeah. So if you're out there, you're prescribed a statin, bring this up to the doctors. Be like, hey man, this is like, do you know this? And I have all the links on the website to, I mean, I don't know how many links I'm going to have by the time I'm done with this. It's probably going to be 15 to 30 various links talking about how statins work, the dangers of statins and all that type of stuff and the history of it. I'll link the books as well. And so this is going to be end of part one. This is just a history of statins. This is why people think LDL is bad. This shitty ass science that was never real science to begin with. Next week's podcast, I want to break down literally how statins work. So that'll be a little more technical, go into really what enzyme they block and what, just why that's so bad for us and why blocking cholesterol and damning cholesterol is never a good thing. And so that'll be next week's podcast. Check that out if you're interested. And yeah, anything else you have to say?
No, I think that's a good way to start this little series that we're about to do. I mean, one thing, like we damn cholesterol, but we talk about cholesterol when we're talking about LDL, and LDL is low density lipoprotein. It's not cholesterol. It's not a measurement of cholesterol. It's a measurement of something else. So it's kind of funny that like cholesterol and LDL even get tied together when it's like, it's not exactly a apples to apples comparison.
No, it's not. Yeah. And we're definitely going to go into that next week and we're break down that whole science because it gets even, you think the science was bad for this, it gets even worse. Trust me. So yeah, so check out next week. But yeah, that's another podcast in the books. Thank you for listening. You can find us at tntwellnessandnutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please rate and subscribe if you haven't already done so. You can find us pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. I hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.